February 19, 2021, it's the Lock Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Spot for Pedro Show, happy Friday. Start off with I Talk to the Trees, John Coltrane.
Oh, man, how do you pronounce this? Thistlelalia, maybe.
That works.
Okay. Ah, see, people, you can tell it's not. Yeah, Brother Matt, he's at the Love Grotto on the Pleasure Point because we're still in quarantino mode, but what, not totally man alone. As the Skype engineers from Estonia, the Righteous Invention, we got Greg Kelly aboard. Greg, welcome aboard.
Yes.
And I'm talking to you in Boston?
I'm in, yeah, Somerville, Massachusetts, right across the river from Boston.
Somerville. I played there. There was a, maybe they closed now, but there was a gig there.
When would that have been?
Well, last tour I did was a year and a half ago.
Oh, it's probably a place called Once, which I
That's
think
it.
They just closed down.
That's it.
Yeah.
And I liked it. It was a good gig. It was kind of an old-timey ballroom or something.
Yeah, and it's about a mile from where I live now, but I was living in Seattle for 6 years, so I actually never went there, and I moved here and was looking forward to seeing that venue, and then because
yeah,
of all this
happen.
Going on, it's closed
you
down.
Know, you know, to get to it, I had to drive right through Harvard. Like,
yeah.
Through the fucking school. Travis, you know, Boston Travis. Well, no grid. It was built on cow paths or something, so it could be a little tough.
Yeah, definitely not a grid.
Well, we got grid here, and it's fuck traff. You know, too much cars is too much car. Anyway, let's learn about your journey through music. What? Greg, tell me your earliest... Oh, first, let's give credit to Evan Lipson for the connect. Brother Evan, thank you.
Sure.
Okay.
Thanks, Evan.
Your earliest musical recollection, please, Greg.
Yeah, early recollections. I don't have any sonic memories, but I remember a lot from pictures and stuff. My parents had some pictures of me when I was 3, and I was apparently really into Elton John, so I had star glasses on and cape and stuff like that. So I guess I was into Elton John, but I have no real memory of it. And then after that, I remember some records. I remember I had a Jigsaw record for some reason and Kiss Alive 1 or 2.
Okay. Where was this?
This was in North Attleboro, Massachusetts, which is southeast near closer to Providence than Boston.
Okay. And the pad you grew up in, was there musical instruments?
Not really. We had a upright piano, but I'm not sure when that arrived. I might have already been a teenager before that showed up.
Did you ever jump on it?
Oh, yeah.
Now, did you have to do the lessons thing?
I never did piano lessons.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
I just mostly fooled around on it.
That's what I meant, because, well, you know, the piano used to be in the rhythm section with the bass and the drum. So was the guitar. They weren't loud. They didn't have amps yet, so everybody had to get together and just, you hear them stomping on those fucking 8 notes. It's a trip. So I'm just curious about that. What about school? Were you in the choir, the marching band? Because, I mean, you end up on trumpet, so I'm wondering.
Yeah, I was in the band. In fifth grade, they sent around a list of available instruments. And I remember I brought it home, and I didn't really have any specific idea from music I'd heard that I wanted to do, but I just arbitrarily kind of chose drums, and my mother said, absolutely not. We're not having drums in this house. So she suggested I play clarinet. I didn't like the sound of that, so ended up on trumpet.
Okay, and was it like the orchestra, or was it the marching band?
It was probably like a wind ensemble and then marching band. But when I was in seventh grade, the high school band actually didn't have enough people in it. So they recruited some people from junior high school. So me and a small group of friends actually ended up playing the high school marching band in junior high, which
Wow. We
liked for a little bit until you get a little older and don't get along well with the people on the football team. And at sophomore year, I basically said, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah. What about at home, the first record you bought with your own money? Was it Elton John?
It wasn't. I'm not actually sure what it would have been, but...
Remember, it's a Walk for Pedro show. There's no hard questions and no wrong answers.
Well, I do remember, for some reason, buying 3 cassette tapes on one day, and it was Genesis, Invisible Touch, Duran Duran Notorious, and General Public.
Yeah, I ask because, you know, when you're a kid, you don't have a lot of money, so it's interesting.
Yeah, lawnmower money.
Right. What about the first gig you saw?
First gig I saw was not my choice. My sister and her friends wanted to go see Huey Lewis and the News. and my dad did not want to go alone with these young girls, so he brought me along for company. And Tower of Power was the horn section. for him in that tour, so that was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember something about him. Like, there was a band from the city called the Mutants, and everybody said that they stole one of their songs, right, a new drug. I got a new drug or something. I can't remember, but the Mutants were funny. It was this short guy singing, and he had two ladies singing with him. They're taller, and they're a trippy band, the Mutants. I just wonder, you know, yeah, you didn't even get to pick it, right? You were hostage. Your pop took you. So,
could be worse.
Now, trumpet. You know, I should ask, because the marching thing. I heard, like, the bone is what you wanted, because the big mouthpiece, like, the little mouthpieces on the trumpets when you're marching is kind of tough. Is that true?
I don't know if it was better for trombone or... it could be painful. And in New England, you end up playing, you know, in some cold weather. But the worst part for me was when I got braces.
Yeah.
That was brutal.
The wool suits, not good in the summer, but...
No. I think ours were polyester. We couldn't... We weren't that fancy.
Okay. Now, but being a trumpet man, was all your instruction in school, or did you get a teacher?
I got a teacher who ended up being great. This guy named Don Ahern, who I had to look up whatever happened to him, but he was my first teacher and just great guy. And it's funny, my mom, when she was a kid, she wanted to play the flute, but they kind of told her, everybody wants to play the flute. We need people to play French horn. You're going to play French horn. She didn't enjoy French horn, so she quit after a year. But she mentioned this to my trumpet teacher, and he actually hooked her up with a flute teacher that she's still friends with. I don't think she takes lessons with her anymore, but he was good.
Yes, teachers can be like the deal breaker with music, especially with young people, it seems. If they're not good at it, they put a bad taste, but yeah, stuff like that. French horn, I think he has an even trippier mouthpiece.
It does, and then you have to have your hand in the bell, so the condensation drips out on your hand.
There was a bass man, right, from The Who, John Entwistle. There's a French horn solo in Pictures of Lily, right in the middle of the song. What about the thing after school, bedroom band, basement band, garage band?
Short-lived band that played in the garage. I don't think we ever even had a gig, but... Because I was playing trumpet, but I was more into punk rock, alternative rock, and stuff like that. Sonic Youth and Cure and
it seems like those kind of bands. A punk scene trumpet would be maybe ska?
Yeah, and I didn't really play. I played with one guy who was really into ska and did that. But otherwise,
people used to make. There was a few years of the Warped Tour where they had a lot of ska bands, and I thought all the kids in the school bands, you know, doing the horns and stuff, like. Really happen, and they can, you know.
Yeah, finally, their moment would come. But, yeah, I couldn't find anything like that. So I ended up in this sort of, I don't know what we were trying to do. It was kind of a mishmash, like kind of a metal guy on guitar and, punk rock bass player with spiky hair, and I was on vocals for some reason, but that didn't last.
Okay.
And that was kind of it. And then me and a couple other guys in the high school band, a drummer, bass player and a saxophone player, started a quartet, ended up being called the Last Chance Quartet, based on the precocious bass player who was really into John Cage and talked to us about chance operations. And that was kind of a...
Oh, avant-garde.
Yeah, we weren't that avant-garde, but...
No, but this opens up maybe your first introduction to that, because the school music wasn't avant-garde.
Yeah, we were not going to... Yeah, you know, definitely. Yeah, we were headed that way. We just couldn't... We hadn't found anything yet, but yeah. This guy covered Cage.
You know, I don't know if you know about Minutemen music, but we incorporated trumpet later on, like with Project Mersch. I think Buzz or Hal was the first time a buddy of ours named Crane. It was almost like the fourth Minuteman.
Cool.
Really, yeah, he even wrote songs to the trumpet and stuff. So that's why I always think of punk as not a style of music. It's kind of stand-by. You know, I want to play this, how do you pronounce this? Nempergan?
We made it up, so.
Okay.
Nimprine.
Nimprine, okay. I want to play Bliss... Viscera?
Sounds good.
Okay. I need to feel your kiss. I need a chance to spin. My energy imagining. gone by. See if only I could draw. I wanna trip you through the breaking crack of dawn wise, to meet the funny friends that look like they got drawn by. See if only I could draw.
Thank you. shine to me. And I said, shit, what was I thinking? Now we don't need news of this. And I know you're dead. Chip away. Don't answer me. Blood and flesh. It is a mystery. Mark my words. Oh, bless by me. Shed out a tear. Anniversary. 15 rounds by the heavyweight dungeons. By the page on love. Beside your own dead dog. Wonder good from above. Burned out candles. Murder with tea. Another bandit has turned out to be. You shouldn't worry. Turned out to be celebration. In the first I read my words. Oh, blasphemy, genonity. Anniversary.
Watch for Pedro show. Nimperin. Greg's going to enlighten you to the history of naming their band this.
Sure, yeah. Nimperin. Was a name that Bahab Rainey, saxophone player, and I came up with. And I had a book, Peter Bowler's Book of Weird and Wondrous Words. It just had words that had fallen out of use. And in there, there was a phrase, ignotum per ignotius, which meant the unknown through the more unknown, which we really liked. And we just chopped out some of the vowels and ended up with Nimperin. And it's always been a question of how do you pronounce it, but that's how it sticks in your mind.
Well, you know what? A lot of English is you got to hear somebody say it first. Look at the way they spell ice. What the fuck's that about? Anyway, Bliss Viscera, Nimperin. And at Crack of Dawn from Richard Hell Voidoid, Richard put out, he sent me a double CD, he remixed Destiny Street. Beautiful. Crack of Dawn. Thirsty More with the Town. Something he just recorded. Obama's Prendon. Lassitude. D.C. area. Hans Rotten out of Switzerland with the demo. Fingertip E-Guitar Synth. Yeah, what a title. Natasha Fagina with Mamsel's Musen. This is Maya's Ma. In the city. I think she plays for the big band there. Symphony. Guy who mixed Double Nickels on the Dime, Ethan James, and recorded it. He was doing hurdy-gurdy for that band. Well,
oh, nice.
Call it a band, maybe. Orchestra. And Hal Behan's from England. Ma, I ain't psycho anymore. X. Is X a hug or is it a kiss? It's one of the, remember, some people sign XO as a salutation.
Kits.
Okay. So maybe that's why it's got an X at the end. And then February 9, 2000, part 4. Greg Kelly, Vic Rollins. Okay. So after school, not after school like in the afternoon, but you get out of high school, you further your music, your trumpet, with more education, right?
Yeah, I went to Peabody Conservatory in Baltimore.
Baltimore.
To study classical music.
There's a great cat making music there named Door. He's got this band called Network Glass. Well, the band, it's him. Network Glass, check him out. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, so I went there to, I thought, start a career in classical music, but didn't end up that way. But the teacher that I had there, a guy named Wayne Cameron, was really helpful for me. And his attitude was basically, I'll teach you how to play the trumpet. I don't care what you do with it outside of that. And then Peabody had a great music library. So I'd spent a lot of time in the music library, just listening to records, looking at books, and practicing.
And at this time, no bands, just totally studying music?
I think when I'm not sure when this started, but me and my roommate at the time was a recording major there, and he had access to the recording studio. So we started just going in there after hours and playing around, just figuring out different recording techniques, playing with reel-to-reel machines, and just really, really experimenting. But we ended up calling ourselves Le Fleur de Mal and put out a couple of cassettes.
The Bad Flower?
Yeah, the Baudelaire poem.
Right.
Or was it Rambeau?
Well, yeah, Drunken Boat, Season in Hell, part of that.
So, yeah.
Yeah, there was this, I remember early Minuteman, trying to write songs and using Rimbaud lyrics where he had the vowels were like colors or some shit. But I didn't realize that he was writing in French. I was reading translations. So.
Yeah, translations can be.
Of course, you know.
Sketchy.
Yeah, can you imagine? So, that's it. Okay, so this band does a lot of, or duet, does a lot of recording, huh?
Well, did you guys do gigs?
We did a couple of gigs, and we ended up having a guitar player later on near the end of my college tenure. But yeah, we did one performance in Washington, D.C. for dancers, and we were kind of up on the balcony just making a ruckus while the dancers were down on the floor in this big reverberant room, and then played at a place called the 14 Karat Cabaret in Baltimore. That was probably my first real outside of school gig that I ever played. And remember, we were on a bill with a poet who, he dressed up like a bird and he chained himself to a chair and read Thule Kupferberg poems. And then
he read his whole poems. How'd you know he was a poet?
Yeah, maybe he wasn't. And then a guy named Karaoke Man was on the bill. And then a group with
sounds like Vaudeville.
Yeah, it was a wild place. Yeah. But then the other group on there was a group, two reed players, Paul Hoskin and John Dierker, and a percussionist named Sean Meehan, who were people that I ended up, Paul and Sean are two people I ended up playing with later on in life. So that was a good time, 1994.
So, yeah, it was a fortuitous connect, right? Yeah, some people, they'll write off a gig before they even play, and you never know the consequences.
Right.
It might end up being your last gig. I don't understand that mentality of people. What do you call them? Even if they're not well attended, we call those character builders. I mean, if you can't play those gigs, you shouldn't be allowed to play the other guy.
Those end up sometimes being really great.
Absolutely.
Gigs.
Absolutely.
Played at a record store in the Nimprine. Played at this record store in Frederick, Maryland called Interzone. And I think before it was Interzone, it was another record store that the Boredoms actually did an in-store in.
Ah.
But we sent them a CD. They said, yeah, come and play. We had a date. We had this month-long tour across the country, and this was kind of near the end of the tour. And somebody bought the CD. He listened to it and threw it in the bin. Somebody bought it, and this kid kept writing to us about how excited he was to come to the gig, and he was going to bring all his friends. And so we get there, and it was just him and one friend and the guy who ran the record store. And we just decided, let's just do this in the pitch dark. So we turned all the lights out, played this pitch dark gig, and it was more memorable than some of the gigs that were played that were well attended.
That's happened to me a lot. You know, it's weird what makes a good gig. You know, of course, for the promoters, probably not that many options. But for the dudes making the music, expressing themselves, yeah, there's a lot of things. And it can be a character builder and be, or cave, that's another you call metaphor, allegory.
Well, they end up being good training for just the rest of life.
Yeah, too. Absolutely.
I mean, if you can navigate some of these situations and get out alive, and especially if you get paid, I mean, that's pretty impressive sometimes.
Yeah. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, February 19, 2021. Edition Walk Pedro Show special guest, Greg Kelly. Hold tight for hour two. February 19, 2021. It's the second hour of the Walk for Pedro Show.
be heard in this silence. Hear what can't be heard in this silence. Hear what can't be heard.
If I open my heart, open my heart, where does all my pain go? Where do I start? Where do I start? I'm so afraid to open my heart, open my heart. If I could let this go, if I could let this, if only I could let this go.
Thank you. of a day. With microtransactions and a bit of the old ultraviolence. Hear it for the boys who refuse to censor themselves. They're out there, they're gonna get you, get you, get you, get you. Pantheon is changing.
Watt for Pedro show. We start out the second hour off with Glass from Nimprime. Whistle and Slide, something live from Sam Lockward to Quiet Man out of Iowa City. Known as Inconspicuous with Macroglossum. That's a title. Macroglossum. Ben Lee, Within the Silence. Ben Salter with The Streets of Verdansk. And finally, Greg Kelly, For Fans, 97. For Fans.
For Fans.
For Fans. Oh, For Fans. I think the number. It
yes.
is the number. Yeah, because when we get the next chunk of music, I'm going to play Never Give Them What They Want. So I was thinking, what the fuck? It's for the fans. No, it's for fans. So it's like we were talking off air with the character builders in the caves, working a cave circuit. In 94 is when you got that band together?
94 was near the end of it. I was in college from 91 to 95, and throughout most of that time, once I started working on this project with the other guy in the group named Sean Finn. And yeah, 94, I think, was our last year there, 94, 95. And then kind of petered out after that. We didn't really keep in touch, and that was it.
But you went on with Trumpet, right?
Yes.
In fact, Nimprime is a current endeavor.
It is. Yeah, we're going on year 21.
21, okay. And this is with Bob, right, who's got an H in his name?
Yes. And we don't play a lot. The last time we played was 2014, but it's just one of those things that it's ongoing but infrequent.
And he plays a tiny little sax, right?
Soprano, curved soprano.
That's what it is. It's a curved soprano. Who was it? Sidney Bechet. The straight ones. John Coltrane was inspired. I guess they were like popular in the, like the key of C trumpets. Philip Sousa, John Philip Sousa used that. And so they went out of style. John Coltrane brought it back. But it was from Sidney Bechet. In the Miles book, it's funny. He says he gave him the horn.
Oh, really?
Yeah, of course. There's a lot of bullshit. You know, whatever.
It's I think good book. Most of it's made up.
The Quincy Troop one, have you read that? Yeah, I like it. It's still, even with the bullshits, it's still good read, I think. And also the Charlie Mangus one, Beneath Underdog. So, you leave Baltimore.
Yes.
And where does music take you?
I went back to Boston. Well, back to North Attleboro, actually. I lived with my parents for about eight months after college. Got a job in Boston. Waited until I saved up enough money and moved into the city. But at that time, my old trumpet teacher in high school, a woman named Jean Snodgrass, she had been playing in a group called the Aardvark Jazz Orchestra. And I think they needed someone to fill in for a gig. So I ended up playing with them before I even moved into the city. And so in 96, played with them for maybe 4 years, which wasn't frequent. I think maybe four times a year there'd be a gig. But that was kind of my first thing that I was doing musically when I moved back to Boston.
And you're helping them, right? Is that your own material?
It's their material.
Yeah.
It's a guy named Mark Harvey, who kind of a legendary Boston guy on the scene who was putting together shows in the 60s and 70s. And he wrote most of the music, but then every once in a while we'd do some Duke Ellington or some other big band music. But yeah, so I was just reading charts and then improvising.
Well, were you composing on your own?
Not really.
Okay.
I was starting to fool around with a four track.
Yeah.
So I was kind of composing in that I'd have an idea, but all the material was improvised. But the way I put it together, not traditional composition, but...
Yeah. I've had a few, a lot of people on, like Jack Wright and Bob Marsh and old-timers, oh, right? Yeah. And they come from the school of, you compose, I think Bob called it jumping from the pole. You're composing, but it's in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, I played with both of those guys.
Yeah, beautiful. Really inspiring talking to both them cats. And Jack sent me his book, too, about free music. I want to play something here by something you gave me called Cold Bleak Heat. What proj was this?
That was a short-lived group. We put out two albums, but Paul Flaherty, saxophone player from Connecticut, and Chris Corsano, who was in Western Mass at the time, drummer.
Drummer, man. Yeah.
Yeah, they did a ton of stuff together, and I did one record as a trio with them, and then at some point, Matt Hainer, bass player, great bass player, who was playing in the No Neck Blues Band and a group called Test and some other bands, we got together and did a few gigs and went to the studio and recorded. I think that was all Paul Flaherty's instigation.
Okay.
And recorded a studio and two records came out of that. We played a handful of gigs and then we've all played together in different situations, but that quartet hasn't played together in years.
Well, then this is a document. Let's listen. Thank you.
Watch your mouth, beware, cause you crash me. Hey, watch your mouth. Watch your mouth, beware, cause you crash me. Hey, watch your mouth. Watch your mouth, beware, cause you crash me.
Watch your mouth, beware, cause in you crash me. Record.
Hey,
you
watch your
break
mouth.
Another
watch your mouth, beware, cause
in
you crash me.
Record.
Hey, watch your mouth. Watch your mouth, beware, cause you crash me. Hey, watch your mouth. Watch your mouth, beware, cause you crash me. Hey, watch your mouth. Watch your mouth, beware, cause you crash me. Hey, watch your mouth. Watch your mouth, beware, cause you crash me.
Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show. Never give them what they want. Cold Bleak Heat. Chris Corsano, yeah. What a stick man with the beat in his hand. And
he's
then some from Poland, Morty, with Zob. I picked this song just because you're this is spelled WCZESNIE. So, I don't know. I know Warsaw, you say Vashava when you're over there. So, you know. But they use this one alphabet, right? The Roman alphabet to try to put all, everybody's language in. So, it's, yeah, can understand. Then finally, Hound Dog Taylor's Ham with Rob Mills. No, Millis. Sorry, Rob. And Christopher Burns, Riot Cake. Now, this is this the Chris Burns from Montreal, Canada?
No, he's from Oakland, or okay. The Bay Area. I don't East know Bay. If he's from Oakland.
East Bay, yeah. That's where Ted from Flipper lives. So, Hound Dog Taylor's Hand. That was the name of the proj?
Yeah, that was a group that existed before I was part of it. But when I moved to Seattle in 2014, I started playing with some of the people in that band. It's a drummer named Mark Ostrowski, bass player John Seaman, and guitar player Jeffrey Taylor, which is, I think, part where the name came. And they'd been playing as a trio for a while. And they asked me to sit in, come to a couple just sessions with them. And then I ended up on all the emails for all the gigs. And I said, wait, am I in the band now? And they said, oh, yeah, you didn't know that? So, yeah, we played together for, yeah, I guess about 3 years until I moved.
And, yeah, because, right, you think of the big guitar sound and all this Seattle. But actually, in the old days, you know, early 80s, late 70s, there was bands like the Beakers. And they had some crazy experimental stuff. It was when Jane's Addiction went up there and played. They all of a sudden, big change. But I remember Portland, Richard Meltzer's. You can actually move to Portland and make a living playing jazz. Why? That's what he told me, one of the reasons he moved there. And so it's funny how, I think it kind of ended, but they were trying to like, oh, this is the happening town now for music, and, you know. It's going to be Chapel Hill. It's going to be Seattle, right?
Yeah, they always find something. I don't know where it is now.
Mark Arm was
online.
The only guy I know that used the word grunge up there. You know, kind of invented kind of things. The worst word is that alternative one. Look at it came back to bite us in the ass. So, you leave Seattle, you come back back east.
Yes.
Okay. And in the meantime?
In the meantime.
Yeah. Like from leaving Seattle, going back to Massachusetts, music-wise.
Yeah, well, that was involved. In June of last year, so.
Oh, it was just recently. Jesus.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah, because you said 2014.
Yeah, I didn't move out. I moved out there for work because when you play the kind of stuff I play, it's hard to make money doing music. So I've worked for an insurance company for 15 and a half years. So I moved to work in an office they had out there and then, just moved back here in June. So it was just a 6 year period from 2014 to 2020.
Okay. So you got the parallel, what did Franz Kafka called it, the two desks, because he worked the insurance man, you know. I think came up with the hard hat rules.
Oh, really?
It's shit like that. Yeah, there's a lot of things about him. You know, he was big into the Yiddish theater. I think he had a big sense of humor. I think he's a pretty misunderstood guy. He died the same, 40 years old, same as John Coltrane. Interesting
guy. Oh, wow.
But he had this, yeah, he had the parallel thing, and he was just going to try to, well, first move out of his parents' house and then try to support himself as a writer. bad health got him and stuff. Look, we're at the end of second hour, February 19, 2021, Dishwap Pedro Show. Special guest, Greg Kelly. Hold tight for hour three. February 19, 2021. It's the third hour of the Wap Pedro Show.
Watch the Pedro Show. We started the third hour off with Morning, and without the U people, Wally Shute, Greg Campbell, Greg Kelly, Bill Nace. And we were just saying off air, I know Bill, I saw him play with Thurston. Really nice cat. He was doing something with Kim, too, Head Body or something.
Body Head, yeah.
Slash. Between there. And then Crane with Always Returning, and some old slapstick routine, Greg Kelly and Olivia Block. So, what the first one here, Morning, this quartet? Was this a regular band or was it a gig?
Well, Bill Nace and I have played a lot over the years.
Great.
So, he was in Western Mass when I was in Boston, so we started playing then. And then we did a duo tour in, what was that, 2012, I think, on the East Coast. And then when I moved out to Seattle, Wally Shute is a old school free improvising saxophone player who lived out there, who I'd met before. So I started playing with him pretty frequently, including with this drummer, Greg Campbell. We had a monthly thing going on for a while where we'd just get together and play. It wasn't a gig or anything. And then Bill and I had a duo tour. So he came out a few days earlier and he wanted to record something with Wally. So we did that quartet. And I think we played once as that quartet live.
Okay. And then this thing with Olivia Block?
Yeah, Olivia is an electroacoustic composer from Chicago. And I'd met her years ago, but this record label, Erstwhile Records, likes to put together duos and trios that haven't existed before. So John Abbey, who runs that label, he'd suggested that Olivia and I do an album together, and we were both on board with that. So I went out to Chicago, did some recording with her there. And then she had made these field recordings, I think in New Mexico, of basically a trash, I don't even know what you call it, but basically where they process the garbage. So she put some microphones in there and told the people who work there, do whatever you want. And they were, you know, taking toilet bowls and throwing them off, you know, 40 floors up, or not 40 floors, but 40 feet up, and those were crashing to the ground. So she had recordings of that. And she ended up mixing in our recordings together, some solo recordings I'd sent her, and then some of these field recordings she'd made.
That's incredible. I want to play this Shearing Husks, and you're the only name on it.
That's me. Thank you.
Watt for Pedro Show, last music for this edition. Greg Kelly, Man Alone, Man with His Horn, Alone, Sharon Husks. Yeah, I can pronounce that one. And then Yoshiaki Fujikawa and the East Asia Orchestra with Divine Gift. And finally, Iron Turtleneck. That's the name of the composition. The proj is Heathen Shame.
Yes.
Enlighten us, Greg.
Enlighten us. Yeah, one crucial factor in my musical education when I moved back to Boston after school was that a record store opened up called Twisted Village Records. And the people who ran that, Wayne Rogers and Kate Village, had been in a bunch of bands for Monster, Crystallized Movements, Magic Hour, and then Major Stars, which is still their current band. But they ran this store, which just had, you know, all manner of obscure, experimental, improvised, psych, electronic music. So I started going in there and spending most of my money and became friends with them. And they had a gig in Philadelphia opening up for Bardo Pond.
Ah, Playbuds shared bill with them.
And
Jason, the drummer, man. Justin? Jason?
I'm not actually sure.
He had like kind of pigtails. He wore his hair in pigtails. But they've gone through different lives. I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
Yeah, but so Major Stars were supposed to play this gig, but then the drummer, something came up with the drummer. And then they said, okay, well, we'll just do something without drums. And the bass player at the time, who's now guitar player with them, Tom Leonard, at a certain point said, I don't think this is a good idea to do this without drums and just go up there and improvise. I think it's going to not be great. So he bailed out, and then they asked me to do it, and I said, sure. And we were driving down to the gig, and we thought, well, should we have a band name? And, yeah, let's think of something. And I think Wayne had said, what's the worst possible band name we could come up with? So
Turned
we
burst.
All offered our versions of that, and Wayne just said Heathen Shame, and we all burst out laughing. We're like, I guess that's the name of the band.
That is pretty bad.
And it turned out Tom was right. It was a terrible, terrible gig. Well, not the gig itself. It was a good gig, but we played terribly.
Well, let me ask you about what's the most important thing about an improvised gig, Greg? To you.
What's the most important thing?
Yeah, it's because I've heard people say, well, you got to be a good listener, and other people, well, you got to like take chances. You got, you know, this kind of stuff.
Yeah, all of that. I mean, you got to make good music somehow or another, and it involves all of those things. And I mean, what I like about it is there's not really a good formula. You do have to listen. You do have to take chances, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. I mean, you can do all those things and still have a terrible gig. And I think on that one, I don't think we did anything wrong individually. It just it didn't work out, you know,
sure.
At the PA or something. Who knows? But well,
can I ask you about this one kind of thing? Repetition. It seems improvised music is not into repetition so much, right?
It depends. I mean, some people are, some people are not.
Okay. So but, you're saying it's maybe improvised music really allows the character, the person, to come out.
I think it does, and then you're influenced by all the music you're listening to. So, you know, if you're primarily an improviser and you end up listening to a lot of, you know, repetitive, minimalistic music, then maybe it'll come out in your improvising.
Oh, okay. So, like humans just gravitate towards shtick no matter what, even if they're trying to be inventing in the moment. You get into kind of patterns you're used to, or...
Yeah, or habits, and then you try and break them, and
right. Sometimes
you try and keep the ones that work and throw out the ones that don't.
Right. And I guess part of that, the editing, improvisers do in real time, in the moment.
Right. And then a lot of it just depends on who you're with. So I try and play with people that I trust and have a lot of respect for and try to work with what they bring to the table, because there are some people that I play with where it's really small, tiny, microscopic sounds that are pretty quiet. And if you're playing with somebody who doesn't play like that, it becomes adversarial if you're not going to meet them halfway. So it's always about trying to meet people where they are and push them a little bit, have them push you, and the end result ends up hopefully being something that neither one of you would have come up on your own.
Right. That really interests me. I really like that idea. It's been a great honor to have you on the show, Greg. Really, it is. And people, you don't have to always be on the electric bass. You know, you can be a trumpet man and an improviser man and be very musical and inspiring. And that's what you are to me, Greg. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you. And hopefully one day in the post-pandemic times, we'll cross paths, maybe play some music together.
That would be bitching. Truly. Really. George, send me some fucking stuff to play. I'll trade files with you.
Sure.
Okay. Count on it. That's a promise, not a threat. People, it's been the February 19, 2021 Dish Up Peter Show. Keep your powder dry.